ways and in all kinds of circumstances to, as we've said before, you don't know if you have unflinching devotional service until there's a cause for flinching, and then you can test for yourself how you're balanced. Krishna says, such a devotee is very dear to me. So these qualities there in the Bhagavad Gita, our first focus for going on Sankirtan is that we're doing service. The idea is that we're going for self-purification. We're going because it's sadhana, it's practice, it's what Krishna asks us to do. And in the midst of doing all those things, we will develop these qualities. If we're doing the service, and at the same time meditating on Krishna and taking help from the devotees, very quickly in the arena of Sankirtan, going out, which is not such an easy thing. When we talk about going out, it's the hardest thing because the tendency of every living entity is to stay in. If you go lift up a rock somewhere in your garden, you'll find a bunch of living entities under there. And they'll say, I don't want to come out from my rock. I want to stay here. Put the rock back. And everyone else feels like that too. They have a warm, nice, cozy house, and nobody, hopefully at home, challenges their opinion too much. And they can stay in there happily. But when you go out into public, it means that you might be challenged. And we have to also remember when we go out, we're the ones going out into public. We shouldn't expect anything from anybody else. We should go out with a non-condescending mood, going out simply to bring Krishna's message of goodwill. And this is what it means to be a goodwill ambassador. Here's our prime directive, to leave everyone with a good impression. Could everyone repeat that, please? Our prime directive is? Yeah, so we want to see how, when we meet somebody, they'll feel satisfied. Some people feel most satisfied if we let them go. And that's okay. You can let people go. If somebody is not in the mood or in their hurry, or you can see that it's not the right time for them, how to leave them with a good impression? Let them go. That's good. That's our prime directive. You can see. Not that you have to hang on to them or follow them or anything like that. Just see that they're left with a good impression. And it's surprising to see what a small environment we're in, because we will meet people again. They do talk to other people. It does have an impact when you meet somebody, and you'll be surprised. You know, people are actually watching us, looking at us to see what our character is when we go out into public. And especially if you're representing a spiritual organization like ours, they're interested to see, what are your qualities? Do you become angry? Are you attached? And it's very important that we leave people with good impression. This is our prime directive. So this takes a lot of pressure off. If I said our prime directive is everyone has to buy a book, then it would be a lot of pressure, because it means you'd have to follow people to the ends of the earth, and you know, even if they didn't want it. But ours isn't. It's to leave everyone with a good impression. And if you start with that, then you'll be in the right mood as an ambassador of goodwill when you go out to preach. One good thing to do is to listen to people. Listen and hear what they're saying to us. Are they in a hurry? Are they in pain? Are they in agony? Are they happy? Have they seen the books before? Just open our ears and listen. A couple of aspects of goodwill, that what create goodwill with people. Treat people with respect. And who can say what's the best way to do that according to Shastra? I mean, how do we treat people with respect? If you were going to say a verse, say from Bhagavad Gita or Sri Upanishad, what would you invoke? Vidya Vinaya Sampane, nice one. Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastani, Shuni Chaiva Shrapake Cha, Pandita Samadarshina. So Kishore has brought up this point of a pundit, a learned person is actually somebody who knows how to treat people equally and with respect. Whether a person's a Brahmin, a cow, a dog eater, doesn't matter. That enlightened person, the pundit, learned person, sees the soul. And it's talking to the soul, whether it's a plant, a dog, he's treating that person as a spiritual being, as part and parcel of Krishna. And therefore, there's respect there. There's respect. Offering kind words. So who can say something about the power of speech from the Shastra and how kind words or the opposite might be detrimental?
I don't remember the word from Bhagavatam, but it says that injuries caused
by... Oh, we have microphones. Okay. Let's keep the microphones going.
The physical injuries are not as harmful as like harsh words spoken by someone you love. I don't remember the context, but this is the words from Bhagavatam.
There's one in the 11th canto where Krishna says to Uddhava that there's the most difficult time to control your mind is after receiving harsh words from an ignorant person. That's in the story of the Avanti Brahmin, who was insulted when after he took sannyas and he traveled across country. People said, "You're not a sannyasi, you're a faker." And they used to steal his things and they'd spit on him and all kinds of things. And he tolerated. And Krishna said, it's the hardest thing to control your mind. In the Bhagavad Gita, right, Krishna says one should speak truthfully. One should speak words that don't offend others, right? This is the austerity of speech. There's an austerity of speech. And we learn to control the tongue when we go out to speak to people. And not just outside, but inside, everywhere, in the house, in the family. It's what we say, you know, one slip of the tongue, what you say to somebody, it can change the course of history, actually. If you say the wrong thing, it's very important to control the tongue. So learning to offer kind words. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that blasphemy of devotees, vilifying devotees, saying bad things about devotees is the most detrimental thing to our spiritual life. So why does the tongue want to do it? And somebody's name comes up, yeah, but that person, I, you know. So he said there is a way to cure that, and that is whenever you feel that the tongue has a tendency to criticize someone, turn it around and make the tongue glorify that person instead. Then instead of just grabbing it like that, you can actually engage it positively. And If you carry this over onto Sankirtan and you offer kind words to people, you'll notice that that's what everyone's looking for. They just want a little kindness, and it comes out in the speech. And when they hear that, they'll feel very satisfied. Being personal nowadays, yes.
This one, while speaking bad things about devotees, so what if a person who is an outsider, like while doing Sankirtan, say he speaks badly, or is it considered offensive for him? Like for us, we know that he's a devotee and we are talking badly, so I understand there is an offense for that. But if a person who talks offensively to devotees without knowing anything about this, so he's like that. He can talk like that to anyone else, not just devotees. So is it still considered offensive for him? Like he'll not be given devotion in the future, so many lives or something like that? Or?
Prabhupada said that when we go out on Sankirtan, and ignorant people, ignorant means they don't know who we are and they don't know who Krishna is, see us, they might think in their mind, oh, there's that rascal Krishna man again. Or they might even say it, you know, why are you Hare Krishnas out here? Rupa Goswami says, Twamanadarada pi mana gutiritam. Nikilo kratapa puta limba lumpasi, that even if somebody one time utters the name of Krishna even disrespectfully, that they're cleared of many sins. So if we're out in public and somebody who's ignorant of the devotees says something disrespectful, but they're mentioning the name Krishna and such, that there's some purification for them. We should be careful from our point to try not to inflame that or to help, you know, if we see that they're going that direction too much, that we should either withdraw or, you know, do something that can bring them around. And that's sort of like when you're a nurse or a doctor and you're taking care of a patient who's delirious. You have to be careful to make sure they don't injure themselves or injure others as well. So the answer is that because they're ignorant and they're saying Krishna, they're coming in contact, there is some scope that they're getting purified. But we should also, if it's chronic, in other words, if sometimes, I mean, this has happened, I remember Chicago Airport, there was a woman who worked for the USO, which is the military services department at the airport, to take care of the servicemen who were coming through. She made it her prime goal in life to harass the devotees. And you never know what might happen. I don't know what happened to Dorothy, bless her heart, after all those years. But I did see other people like that used to rip up books in front of us just to, you know, they'd think they were killing God or something like that, or making us feel bad, and who later became purified and repented. I've told you the story about the lady in Denver Airport who, when we'd go through security, she was one of the security guards, she'd make us stop and take out every single book from the case just to slow us down because she knew we were in a hurry to get to the rush. And she'd go through every book like this just to look for a bomb or something like that. She was, and then it would take her 20 minutes, you know. And after doing that for about 3 months, one day when we came back to the temple, my godbrother Naikatma nudged me and said, "Hey, who is that at the front there?" And I'm like, "That couldn't be, could it?" And it turned out it was the lady. She came to the temple. It's a little individual, you know. It really is based on the person's heart. But in general, we take it that somebody who's ignorant, but they have some bad feeling towards the devotees because they're coming in contact, there's scope for them becoming purified, and we have to judge each individual case and become expert at how to help that person, you know, come along as best as possible. Is that okay? Okay. Treat people with respect and be personal. Everyone's looking for personal touch because we're all persons, and really what's lacking in the material world is this personal touch. So devotees are personalists. Vitaraga paya krodha. We're giving up this tendency to be impersonal because we're understanding actually and connecting ourselves to Krishna in the form of his name, the form of his devotees, and our hearts opening up. And so when we offer that kind of love to people, when we meet them on Sankirtan, they'll feel it. And that's the most important thing. That's what people are really looking for. And they'll respond to that. That's all part of being an ambassador of goodwill. That's what we are going out to do, is to extend ourselves in that way. And it's the greatest service to offer that kind of thing to other living entities, whoever they are, wherever they are. Make people feel special. We did this at one of the longer seminars that I've done. I made signs that everyone wore around their neck, and it said, "Make me feel special." And then we divided into groups. And then I said, "Okay, now everyone pair up, and someone who's wearing a sign, you know, read what it says in their sign and make them feel special in some way." And so the devotees, you know, were thinking of ways to make the person feel special. And then I asked everyone, "Well, how did it feel when your partner was telling you how special you were in different ways? They found something about you." And they said, "It felt really good." And so if you keep this vision that everyone has a sign around their neck that says, "Make me feel special," then you'll be about at the right level when you're talking to people, when you go out to meet them on Sankirtan. You'll be an ambassador of goodwill, because that's what everyone is thinking when they're getting dressed in the morning and when they're doing their hair and the whole thing. They're looking and they're thinking, "I am kind of special, aren't I?" And they're looking for that validation the rest of their life. You know, anyone who looks at them and says, "You know, you're special." And they are, because they're souls. And, you know, you can find something special in every single soul. It's their part and parcel of Krishna. And this is the vision of the Sankirtan devotee. They love everybody because they love Krishna. And they're seeing how everyone's connected to Krishna. And they pour out their heart to people in different ways, and they find ways to make them feel special. This was a picture I took in New York at the Ratha Yatra there. This devotee in the white from Washington, D.C. was shaking the hand of this gentleman for the first time. And I just noted that, you know, this handshake, this is a very personal thing. When you reach out, touch somebody's hand and shake it, there's a connection, really, between one living entity and another. It feels good. And this kind of work that you are all doing, that we're doing here, going out, meeting people one-on-one, making them feel special, introducing them to Krishna consciousness, it's the most important work in the world. One person at a time, beginning with myself. one person at a time, beginning with myself. And just think, every single person you meet, it's a momentous occasion when you meet somebody and you give them opportunity to take to Krishna consciousness. And it's very, very important. And we should be fully conscious of that for each person. Now, this gratitude is such a powerful force in the universe. Shukadeva Goswami talks about how an advancing transcendentalist first should start to see the universe in a unique way. And what is that? That it's Krishna. The universe is Krishna. Just as your body has life flowing through it from the soul, so similarly the universe has life flowing through it because it's Krishna's body. It's his external body, manifestation of the universal form. And the yogi who makes further advancements starts to look at it and think how kind Krishna is and feel gratitude. And, you know, that he's providing water and air and light and fruits and flowers and all these things. And he becomes overwhelmed with gratitude. So living in gratitude, finding ways that we can feel gratitude and express gratitude to the people that we meet, that we live with and we associate with all the time, this is real life. This is the way an ambassador of goodwill spends his or her time, is expressing this gratitude. Preaching means, preaching means giving. We're not going out to make money, we're going out to give something. And if we remember this phrase, preaching means giving, we can remember the Panchatattva. And they went out with this mood where they plundered the storehouse of love of God and they distributed its contents. And who knows here who studied spiritual mathematics? Did you take that in college? Spiritual math? 1 - 1 = 1. Om Purnam Adah Purnam Idam. It's just amazing, you know, if we really put our mind to giving out Krishna consciousness to others and don't worry about, how am I going to get it back? Well, I mean, there are ways in which we're careful stewards of our resources that we've been given, and we do it in careful ways, and we do calculate things. But in general, when we give out Krishna consciousness to others, it'll increase in our own heart, in our own life, and in our case, in our temple, as we concentrate on this, how to expand it by giving it to others and think preaching means giving, the more facility we'll get. And this is what happened with the Panchatattva. The more they distributed the contents of the storehouse of love of God, the more the contents increased. And we should always keep that in mind, to be generous and give it out lavishly, as much as possible. We'll always come back. Krishna's not a poor man. He can supply so many things. He just wants to see how we're sincere and distributing it. Be humble. Don't condescend. You know, there's a case in every religious group where someone might get the idea in their head that we're so special, we know everything, and everyone else is so fallen that I'm going to go out there and tell them how it is. And they better listen because they're all going to hell. And neophytes have that in every religious group, including in ours. So we have to be mature and understand that we have a lot to learn from everybody as well. That we can, we should be humble. Be like a tree. A tree gives to everybody and doesn't expect anything in return. Even when a tree is chopped down, still says, okay, take my wood. You can use my wood now, now that you've chopped me down. And we should be humble like grass and not mind when others are a little bit harsh with us. We should tolerate these things. Of course, there are cases, it's not that we're pushovers when we go out to preach Krishna consciousness either. If someone makes strong points against our philosophy or against the devotees, it's also a kind of humility to stand up for that. And we keep our balance and we don't cater to that, but we'll vigorously point out exactly what the truth is. But without condescending, without a malice in our heart, or feeling that people are lower than us. We must express empathy for people who are suffering. It's not that because we're not our body, that doesn't mean people aren't suffering, and that we shouldn't feel empathy for them. Once in the Brahmacharya Ashram in St. Louis, Missouri, a devotee a god brother of mine was very sick. He had some kind of flu, and he had been lying on the floor in the Brahmacharya ashram for a few days. And he groaned. I remember he groaned. And there was this new Brahmacharya in the ashram who had just learned the philosophy, how we're not our body and such. And he said, "Oh, Prabhu, you're not your body, you know." And this senior devotee rolled over and he goes, "Prabhu, you're not my body either." So don't express it. It's okay to express empathy for others' suffering. And this is part of being an ambassador of goodwill. Go out of your way to feel other people's suffering. And Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Can somebody read this quotation into the microphone?
"He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna." Bhagavad Gita 6:32.
Thank you. So a true yogi shows empathy. This verse means empathize. So an ambassador of goodwill going out to preach means we should empathize with people's plight and see that they're a soul. When we were just sitting at Bali Mordan's house, I had a vantage point where I could see out the front window, and I saw a family out there. The husband was smoking a cigarette, spitting on the sidewalk, and his kids came over. And I was just watching him, and I was thinking about the condition of the soul, you know, how he'd come to that point of smoking a cigarette. And kind of, I was just sort of imagining the rest of their life being fairly degraded. That's where my mind went, and thinking about, you know, what it's like to live in the modes of ignorance and passion. And it's hellish. It's painful, actually. And the soul is not meant to wallow in that kind of situation. So I was feeling sorry for them, actually. I was looking out the window thinking, you know, why are we in here listening to Brihat Bhagavatamrita and they're out there spitting on the sidewalk and smoking a cigarette and probably going to watch TV or something like that, which is, there's no satisfaction in it. So we should have this kind of feeling and see that, you know, living entities are in a kind of situation that they need to be, we can help them. Because we've been helped, we can also extend help to them. And this is something that is, this is Sankirtan. This is the mood of the devotee going on Sankirtan. Can you read again this quotation?
"This is our movement. We want to see that everyone is happy. That is the Vedic vision. Sarve sukhino bhavantu."
This is this fine young gentleman in the middle was a homeless man in Santa Cruz. This is Jagat Jivan, and I can't see who's on there. Oh, that's Devji. So this is in Santa Cruz, and this guy was late for the... there was a homeless shelter where they could go get dinner, but when we showed him this book and told him that people would give donations, I think he was a little bit mentally retarded, but he became so enthusiastic to give a donation. His friends were calling him and saying, "You're going to be late for the dinner, you're going to miss it," and everything. He said, "I don't care, I'm going to give a donation." He poured everything out of his backpack until he could get down to a quarter at the bottom there, and he donated that. And he was so pleased with himself. You can see the look on his face that he was so happy that he helped out. This is the mood of the Sankirtan, is that we understand that the only way that someone can become happy is to come to knowledge and to be reconnected with Krishna, and our goal is to make them happy. And when they become happy, we'll feel very satisfied also, because it satisfies Krishna.
"This is human life. Human life means paropakara. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. To do others something auspicious. That is human life." Yeah, Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you. Krishna even said this to the cowherd boys when they were going door to door and they went to the wives of the Brahmins. He gave that famous shloka about how one should use one's life, one's wealth, one's intelligence in order to do welfare for others. And really, that's what the human form of life is meant for, and especially those who are on this path and following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're thinking parupakar. A Vaishnava is paradukatuki, which means he feels suffering because of the suffering of others, and they want to do something about it. And we can do something about it by distributing prasadam. In this case, we were laughing because this boy came over to the booth in Santa Cruz, and he thought we were selling the cookies and that he would do us an injustice by eating them before paying for it and then saying that he couldn't pay for it. So you can see a Kurnoth. I think you can see his expression there, but he's laughing because the joke's on this boy who's eating prasad that we're giving out free anyway. And he thought that he was being a wise guy and eating it before he did. So Prabhupada himself went all over India. He went all over the world, person to person. If you listen to all his taped lectures and conversations, you'll find that he spent hours and hours and hours speaking to all kinds of people, even people who were probably, like, obviously, actually, ignorant and, you know, not intelligent enough to understand everything he was saying. But he was very patient. And he also spoke to big people, like here. This was, I believe, the Prime Minister of India. And being an ambassador of goodwill means going out and meeting people where they live and taxing our brains how to make this personal contact and offer them this greatest gift of Krishna consciousness. So being an ambassador of goodwill means engaging everyone appropriately and as completely as possible. Can you read that once together? So engaging people, there's lots of different ways to engage people. Of what are some of the ways when we go on Sankirtan that they that you would consider that they had been engaged in Krishna's service? Okay, if they chant Hare Krishna, that's huge. I mean, all the Shastras say if someone chants one time Hare Krishna, then they get inestimable benefit from doing that. What's another way? If they give a donation. Giving donations is a huge thing because, as Prahlad Maharaj says, there's a shloka in the seventh canto where he says, money is the honey. That everyone's working for money. Even people, they risk their lives, and they're giving their life, their life energy to earn some money. So when you say, at the end of your presentation, you say, okay, would you like to give some money? That's a big deal. It's like, okay, now I'm going to vote. Do you really like what I had to say? I mean, and you can see the pain in it. You know, it's like, oh, I don't have any money. They have money. But he's like, I don't have any money. He's like, all right, it's okay, calm down. You have money now. Just give a penny, you know. And then, you know, it's a whole process for everyone wants to keep their money because it means freedom. It means happiness. This is what's in their mind. So engaging them by getting a donation, that's a really big thing. And that money gets engaged in Krishna's service. We bring it back. We don't spend a farthing for anything other than Krishna consciousness. And that energy that they gave that goes into printing a book, making prasadam, building a temple, all those things, they get eternal benefit for that. What's another way? Prasadam. There's our secret weapon. You know, even people who would never read our book or say Hare Krishna even, you know, they'll pop a lollipop in their mouth. When I was just telling the devotees last night, we had a program, and I bring these lollipops with me to Vrindavan. You know, going parikram, everyone's coming over to asking for money, so I give out lollipops everywhere. And even the monkeys, they want something. So when I was coming back on a Govardhan parikram, there was a monkey sitting at the gate of the ashram. And I was kind of tired as the end of the parikram, and I kind of flung one of the dum-dum at him. And in one move, I'll do it slow motion, but without even practically looking, grab, unwrap in his mouth. Now I'll do it faster. I couldn't believe it. I took a picture of him, and even a monkey can appreciate prasadam. But if I showed him a Gita, he would probably bite me. I'm sure he would bite me if I tried to explain it to him. So there are people out there that are a little bit more on the level of the monkey, not as fortunate because he lives in Govardhan, but they're on that level, so they can take prasadam. And there's, you know, we know prasadi sarvatukhanam hanirasya pajayate, and there are many, many verses about glorifying prasadam. It's our secret weapon. And one way to preach, really, is to concentrate on prasadam. Like, say you move into a new town and you go to the bank teller And you know, the first day you go to make your deposit and you give your bank teller a cookie. And she says, "Oh, thank you very much." I'm just anticipating what someone would say when they get a cookie. And then you come back next week to make your deposit, you give another cookie, and say, like, "Oh, you again, another cookie." And then after maybe three or four times, and they go, "Who are you?" They want to know, you know, who are you? What do you do? I say, "Oh, well, here, I'll show you, you know, this is what I'm into." You can give them a book. It opens their heart when you give prasadam. And we should give prasadam lavishly wherever we go. Anything else?
Well, you can ask them to help them set up the table. If you are like carrying books from your car to the place, then you can ask someone, "Hey, can you
excellent
just help me?"
Engage people in helping you out. Jayananda, of course, was famous for that. When he was building the Rathyatra cart, he'd notice, you know, anybody walking down the street and pull them in. Yes, Sandhya Mataji.
We have this, I don't know if you noticed, we have this very nice and lively Brazilian lady. She's about 70 years old at the Palo Alto Sankirtan.
Yes, yeah.
And so she, you bet, she doesn't understand, you know, what Hare Krishna means or whatever. She just likes dancing.
Yes.
And so she was talking to my husband. And so what we did was we took her phone number, and the next time we had it, we just called her. And she just comes here just for dancing.
Oh, you did that. I wondered how she showed up all of a sudden. New. Very nice.
You know, dancing is another way of engaging.
Yes, this is spiritual intelligence. When you see somebody, you anticipate how to bring them in and engage them as fully as possible. So it was a very, very smart move. This is how to be an ambassador of goodwill. Find out ways to bring people in, see how to engage them. And there are many, many more ways. Here's a scene. This was at Vancouver Rathyatra. And this brahmachari named Damodar, he's standing on side, that's a second story window, and that's a heating cooling unit he climbed up on, because he saw somebody up in the window as we were going by in the Rathyatra cart with the kirtan. He saw somebody up in the window who was feeling some ecstasy. You know, he did a whole transaction, sold a book through the second story window. It just impressed me as sort of, it means, you know, going that extra mile, extra inch, whatever it takes to reach out to people wherever they are and give them that opportunity. It's very pleasing. Prasadam, kind words, books, Maha Mantra, invitations, lifetime friendship. So all these things we have to offer. And as ambassadors of goodwill, we're in the service business. And our motto is always better service. It's the ABS principle. We meditate on that, how to always do better service for the devotees, for the spiritual master, for the for Krishna. In every way, there's always little ways that we can meditate and pray that we can improve our service. And this is a real life, a real progressive life. For as long, many years as we have, if we're engaged like this and thinking forward how to improve the quality, then we'll be happy, we'll feel satisfied, always stretching to try to make it better. And an easy thing to do is to ask after each time we perform some service what worked well and where there was room for improvement, and make a note of it and make it better the next time. So this is part of the duty of being a Sankirtan leader at ISV, is to have this mood of generosity, to be ambassador of goodwill, and to be in this ABS principle, always better service, always searching how to do better service for the devotees, for the Sankirtan movement, making notes of it, and use your spiritual intelligence how to cooperate it and improve it. And when we're forward-looking like this and feeling the expansion of the Sankirtan movement, Krishna will be pleased, and then we'll also be pleased, and we'll automatically make advancement in spiritual life. Shushu shro shadatanasya vasudeva kataruchi syan mahat seveya bipra punya tirta nishevanat. When we do this kind of service, we're serving the great acharyas who have passed this knowledge down to us. And by doing that kind of service, we'll automatically, within our heart, feel a proclivity for practicing devotional service and hearing Krishna katha. Good habits. Can you read that?
Form good new habits. Simply it's by practice. So as by practice you have increased so-called demands of your body, you can decrease it also, Srila Prabhupada.
So practice every day good habits and incrementally improve. And you're going to be 5 years older in 5 years anyway. So if you use each day, each minute, and you think of how to make it a little bit better, in 5 years, you'll have made huge improvements. And on the spiritual side, there's unlimited improvement available. On the material side, not so much. You can only go as far as your karma. But on the spiritual side, you can improve unlimitedly and go on doing it eternally.
Bhagavad Gita 5:7. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled.
There's Satyadev out in Haight-Ashbury one day, a few years ago, distributing in the rain. You'd think, you know, being out on a rainy day would be a miserable thing, but we had so much fun being out there under the shelter of the awning and distributing in the rain and cold. And there's a Hari Bol from Karuna Sindhu Mataji. Hare Krishna. Any questions about this? Or, you know, comments? Because I'm going to go on to the next presentation. Go ahead. Somebody comment. One comment? Okay, two comments. Okay, reflection from the Ambassador of Goodwill. Reflect back what you heard. Srivas Prabhu?
More than that, I had a question.
Okay.
Over the years, I have seen you distribute books. So how do you remain very calm, even if a person is provocative and trying to, in either in the body or in words?
Well, one thing is that I'm getting old, and you know, partly it's because, you know, when you get old, then you've seen a lot of things happen. Like, I guess you don't get agitated if I remember being young. You go out and you start distributing books, and then a lot of people wouldn't take. And I get all in anxiety, but over the years I've seen that everything always evens out and it always works out in the end. And when people, you know, are provocative on Sankirtan and things like that, as I said before, we've seen people come and be provocative, then also become devotees. And, you know, we understand that it's part of being out in public. You should expect it, that people maybe have arguments with you or don't like that you're there. Actually, for the most part here in the Bay Area, we don't have that very much. We have it pretty good here. People are very liberal-minded and open and things like that. But in general, you know, if someone's mean or provocative or something like that, then we know there's many others out there, and we just go on to the next one. I'll go into that too as far as the ripe fruit philosophy, as far as preaching to people. We're looking for the ripe fruits. And it's part of our duty when people are provocative or they're angry towards us or something, to learn how to not agitate them more and to move on to the next person. Maharaj, you pass him the mic.
When somebody says no, then you think and you say to them, thank you very much. And you know in your heart that that person who says no is bringing you one person closer to the one who's saying is going to say yes.
In fact, we had a yes, Sunny.
Oftentimes when people say no, that they didn't mean no, they say they don't know. So, you know, especially for the book field, that is what we need to clear up with them.
That's very true. Oftentimes when people say that they don't have money, it means they don't know how much to give. They're not clear, did we want a big donation, or does it matter how much, or we're selling the book and so on. We had a technique, I've used this before in training new bhaktas who have just going out for the first time to sell books, and that is I told them that they have to get 10 no's in a row. That's their goal, to get 10 people to say no. And so then they have a different mindset. They're not thinking, well, I have to sell a book or something like that. So, no, 10 people in a row that tell you no. And sometimes they'll get up to 7 and go, oh, I only got to 7. Somebody took a book. It's like, you better try harder. Try to get to 10. And I've had that experience sometimes when I've gone out by myself for long periods of time. I used to go out every single day, and then sometimes I didn't have a partner. And then what I started doing, because it's easier with a partner, you can always, if anything happens, you have someone to commiserate with, it's more fun. There's more energy. But if you're by yourself, in my situation, I was by myself for some time, I found that I kept a little chart with me. And every time someone reacted in one way or another, I just mark off. And as an example, if I'd call to somebody and they didn't respond at all, have you ever had this happen? You say, hello, excuse me, and they don't even look at you? Isn't that the most painful thing? And that's part of Sankirtan too. What I reflect when I say something to someone and they don't even look at me. Like Maharaj had this experience on the train the other day when he asked somebody for something and they didn't even look at, he looked away like he didn't exist. I always think, that's what I'm doing to Krishna. That's me doing that to Krishna, being in the material world. And how does Krishna feel towards me? And now I know how it feels. And now I have empathy. And but I keep a little chart. First one, I'd say something and then they don't look. Second one, they look but they don't come over. Third one, they come over, they take the book or they hold the book and they give it back. Next one, they hold the book, they give a donation. Next one, they hold the book, they give a big donation. And I had a whole list of possible scenarios on the chart. And every day I'd go out, I just keep checking off on the list. And I had a whole pile of them. And after a while, I look and say, you know, if I'm out for 4 hours, this is what happens every day. There's a certain number of people that are just not going to look at me, and a certain people are going to give a big donation, and everybody else in between. And the curve, you know, the statistics of it, it always works out over time. And so it's a way to kind of calm the mind and to know that you go out and do your duty dutifully, and don't be a results monger. So this is called the four ironclad laws of book distribution. Everyone here, please memorize these, because you want to be within the law. And here's what they are. The four ironclad laws of book distribution. Number one, your sadhana must be strong. Number two, you must get books. Number three, the more you show, the more you sell. Number four, you must organize. And here's how it works. Sadhana, your spiritual practice should be strict, serious, and sincere. Prabhupada used these three words in many different places in regard to the practice. Strict, serious, and sincere. Now, in the amount of time that we have today, because there's a few other practical things that I want to go into, I'm not going to go into all the nuance of what all these things mean, but most of you here know what they mean. And sadhana means that you should feel responsible to do your sadhana in such a way that you get a taste. If you do your sadhana strictly, seriously, and sincerely, you'll develop a taste. It's like when you go to the ocean, if you just look at the surface of it, you'll start thinking after a while there's nothing in the ocean. But if you go to the ocean and you dive deep in the ocean, you go deep enough, you'll find all kinds of treasures down there. You'll see all kinds of fish, and you know there's miraculous things in the ocean. In fact, oceanographers say they've only cataloged about 10% of all the life forms in the ocean. And how they know that, I have no idea. But but it means that there's a lot more down there. And there's a lot more down there in our sadhana too, but we have to dive deep within it. It means to be strict, serious, and sincere. And if you do that, and you get something out of it, every day when you do your japa, and you do your reading, and you concentrate, you're sincere and serious about it, then you'll get something out of it. It means you dove in the ocean, you went below the surface, and you come out with some treasure. And you'll start piling those treasures up in a place that you can see them. And it'll give you faith, because you know it's there. You've experienced for yourself. And then distribute the overflow. This is what we're doing. If you have it, if you're getting these treasures from your own sadhana, you don't have to have any technique on Sankirtan. Your very countenance will be the technique in and of itself. Someone who's tasting Krishna in his name and is feeling so much happy to be in the association of devotees and meditating 24 hours a day, how to serve the devotees because you love them so much. When you go to somebody's door and knock on it and they open and they look at your face, that's what they see. It's the overflow that they're buying. They look in your eyes and they see someone that's unusual, that doesn't want anything from them, that has something to give them, and they'll be attracted to it. And this is where it comes from. It comes from your own personal practice. And this is what Prabhupada said too. When we were actively engaged in preaching book distribution, and that was our job, we were on the BBT party. It was a separate party, actually, from ISKCON even. We were going around and teaching people how to do book distribution. Maharaj and I were on that party together for some time. And there was a large group of us who was stationed in different places on a regular basis. And then our leader, Tripurari Maharaj, asked Prabhupada once about techniques of Sankirtan. And Prabhupada said that teach everyone to be sincere. Teach the devotees to be sincere. Get books. A lot of highly educated devotees in this room. Some of you have studied, you know, physics or mathematics, and maybe even I don't know, so many things in engineering. And it's just a physical fact that you cannot distribute books that you don't have. So you have to get books, and that means they're available. So get them. It's the greatest wealth to have books. Keep them in your house. Keep them in your car. If you're going on a trip, make sure that you get the books, put them in your bag before you go out. You know, everywhere you go, have them, because all kinds of circumstances you'll find yourself in circumstances where you wish you had the books. And if you get in the habit of keeping them all the time, then you'll be able to distribute them. The more you show, the more you sell. Please repeat.
The more you show, the more you sell.
People are looking for these books, and if you just show them, they'll take them. We have this, you know, little teeny table here with books, and every once in a while somebody told me the other day, they were sitting here and someone came in the temple, took some books, put money in the box, and went out again. How they knew they were in here, I don't know, but they're being shown somehow, and living entities will come. If you park it, you know, if you go to the Arabian desert and you put up a book table, somebody will come, because Krishna is sending these people to come. And you should know, wherever you go, if you just show them, figure out how to show it. Even if you don't know what to say or anything like that, show the book and it'll sell. Organize. I'm not going to go into all the details right now about organization, but I will say that you can do book distribution a little bit on your own for the rest of your life, wherever you go, and be happy. If you want to do something big and you want to expand it in big ways, you have to use all kinds of ways to organize so that we can expand and use all your talents, all your skills, all your brain power to figure out how to organize better, like we're doing here, little by little, so that more and more people can take to it, and then we can expand the Sankirtan in a big way. And this is called the Brihat Madanga. It's the bigger concept of how to get as many people involved as possible in Krishna consciousness. Four laws of book distribution, Hare Krishna. That's a Buddhist monk I met at the LAX airport who bought a Bhagavad Gita. And after I took this picture, I noticed that on this side, can you read this? It says, actually it doesn't say united, it says unite. But on this side it says united. Am I crazy or what? Unite, he buys the book, united. So... Hare Krishna. Need I say more? Come on now. I am a little crazy, but it's okay. Okay. All right, here we go. You ready for the next one? Anybody have any points or questions? Go ahead.
So, Prabhu, my question, sometimes, you know, when you're you're chanting in the morning and you try to keep a strong sadhana, and then you know that the day you have to go distribute books. But sometimes, you know, when you know you're not going out to distribute books, you're going out to work, you still chant your rounds, but you may not be thinking, or the impetus may not be there, that Krishna, when you're chanting, you're praying that, Krishna, please make me sincere to become an instrument of you so I can go out. So what is it that what is the impetus for the devotee to kind of, when they practice their sadhana, that they should have in the back of their mind that, you know, I always want to become your instrument. So what is the motivation?
What do you want? Do you want to become Krishna's instrument?
Yeah.
Then pray for that, because you'll get whatever you ask for. You know, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna will fulfill all your desires. Yanti Deva, Vrta Deva, and Pitra Yanti Pratir Vrta. Whatever you're aiming at, you'll get it. And Krishna's completely independent, and he's all-powerful. He's Yogeshvara. So figure out for yourself what you want. Every living entity wants something. And look in your heart and find out what you want. Before you start chanting, you could do this. Sit down and think about it. You don't just grab your beads and I got to get these done and start chanting. But when you sit down, think about it for a minute. Think about who you are. This is called, like, when before you do puja, there's a whole process called yoga, where you sit down and you meditate that you're an eternal living soul, and you understand that actually you're a servant of Krishna. And so before you chant, sit down and think in your heart of hearts, what do I want? I want to become an instrument. I want to have a taste. I want to be able to think of Krishna 24 hours a day. Meditate and then pray to Krishna when you're chanting. Keep that in your mind. It's called fixing your sankalpa. What's your intention before you chant? Fix it up as you sit down. And then really pray for that. Focus and pray to Krishna from your heart when you're chanting. And he'll fulfill your desire. Okay? So these are some practical steps. And let's see what they are. Okay, they're ripe fruits. Here, these are steps that will help you learn how to distribute a book. And I've just, you know, simplified it as much as possible to keep it as a general concept, how there are steps that you can keep in mind to distribute a book to people. And the first concept is called the ripe fruit principle. And it's much easier when you go out on Sankirtan to think in this way, that understand that there are ripe fruits out there. Ripe fruit means what? What do I mean by ripe fruit? Can somebody? Somebody who's ready to accept Krishna consciousness. Has anybody ever met a ripe fruit when you're on Sankirtan? Yes? Yes? And what are they like? Give me single words to describe, adjectives to describe what they're like. Just single words. Turn the mic on.
When they know that you are from ISKCON, with a broad smile, they welcome you.
Okay, so single word is welcoming.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're welcoming. What else? If you meet a ripe fruit. Yes. Gandharvika back there.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, as you said, I think Krishna's mercy plays a very important role. So the other day, when we were out for door-to-door on Gaur Purnima, I really met one lady who was like very favorable. She said, as soon as I gave the book, she said, "Oh Krishna, I am very much interested in all this and I had never known." And then I just gave the book and she invited inside and we talked a little bit. And then after that, she gave me her email and contact number. I totally forgot about that. But after 5 days, she called me.
Oh.
I was like really amazed how, if we are really, Krishna's mercy works, that she wants to come and things like that. I was reminded of what I should do, the follow-up that she reminded me.
Okay, so right from, she was interested.
Very much interested.
And inviting. So it's like you could see her interest level was really high and that she invited you in. She was so interested and called you back later. These are symptoms of a ripe fruit. What else? Any more?
They want to participate in what we are doing.
They want to participate. They're interested. Good. Nice. Maharishi, did you have one? I thought you had your hand up.
Receptive.
Receptive. Okay, receptive. inquisitive. Yeah, that can be one. We were at the shoe store 2 days ago, and the person who was fitting some shoes for Maharaj started asking. He was the owner of the store, and he started saying, "Hope I'm not offensive in asking these questions, but you know, who are you? What do you do?" And so inquisitive. You can tell the person's a little ripe. You know, if they're not inquisitive, if they're not inviting, if they're not welcoming, they might not be ripe yet, right? So we're looking for ripe fruits. So the ripe fruit principle, here's a ripe fruit Divyanga Prabhu met on the campus there. He was very interested, very inquisitive. We took his photo. When you go to pick fruits on a tree, you pick the ripe fruits. And the ripe fruits have a certain characteristic. They're sweet, they're juicy, they're soft, they're a certain color. And so are people. They look a certain way, they react a certain way. So, and they're what?
They're mature.
They're mature. Yeah, like a mature fruit. You can tell. Sometimes you can't tell. And that's part of the art of Sankirtan too. It's not that it'll be obvious every single time. Sometimes with a fruit too. Like, I like avocados. I admit it. And when you buy an avocado, I mean, you know, you have to, sometimes you have to squeeze it a little bit. And they're like, and sometimes it's borderline. Is this one ready yet? You know, I try it a couple times. And so it's with people too. Sometimes you have to squeeze them a little and see, you know, is this person ripe? You don't know exactly, but you test it. But I know avocados pretty well now because I eat them every day. And, you know, you'll get to know people also. Now, here are some very important concepts as far as distributing books go. And that is qualify. Before you present, qualify. Now, what does qualified mean? Could you read the definition?
Be entitled to a particular benefit or privilege by fulfilling a necessary condition.
One more time.
Be entitled to a particular benefit or privilege by fulfilling a necessary condition.
Okay, this is what it means to qualify. So a person's entitled to a benefit and there's a necessary condition. So if you qualify people before you hand them the book, you'll find a much higher degree of success. And how do you qualify them? You use radar.
A system for detecting presence, direction, distance, and speed of aircraft, ships, or other objects by sending out pulses of high-frequency electromagnetic waves that are reflected off the object back to the source.
Okay. So this is my system of qualifying people, finding out where the ripe fruits are, is use radar. And so with people, you can understand their presence, their direction, their distance, and their speed. And our radar is fully functional. We all have it, and you can get feedback from people using this electromagnetic frequency waves called your voice, your vision, and you'll get accurate feedback from people. You'll learn this. Radar waves, you can send out this electromagnetic frequency. Like, if you just ask somebody, are you from Fremont? The answer to that question will tell you almost everything you know need to know about that person up front. When I ask somebody, are you from Fremont? No? So Kishore answered me, and he had a smile on his face, and he said no kind of gently. So I would start thinking maybe he's a ripe fruit. Are you from Fremont?
Yes.
Okay, so he answered truthfully, first of all. But maybe, you know, it's a little borderline. I can't quite tell this about. Are you from Fremont?
No.
Still, a little indescript. Are you from Fremont? Are you from Fremont?
Sure.
I'm not. Are you from Fremont?
Why do I need to be?
Yeah. Okay. Now we're getting a little bit of you know, acrimony back. That shows. Are you from Fremont?
No. Are you?
See,
what is
this interview? There. Now I'm getting some other side of the spectrum. You see. Are you from Fremont? Sorry, I don't have time. There, good. See, you get all these, unbelievably, you ask one question, are you from Fremont? And you'll get like, yes, no, why are you asking? I don't have time. I didn't ask you if you had time. I asked you from Fremont. But You see, that's because I'm sending out radar. It's not about the question. They know that I'm asking them because I'm trying to get some feedback. They know I want to stop them. They know there's something involved. And if I just put out the radar, it'll come back to me and say, are you from Fremont? I don't have time right now. You know. What do you know about them if they say, I don't have time right now, according to this list? Speed. That tells you a little bit about their speed. They're moving fast. If they, if you say, are you from Fremont, and they don't answer, what does it tell you something about?
Distance.
Their distance. They're a distant person. If they, you say, are you from Fremont, and they say, oh, how can I help you? Maybe it tells you something about their presence of mind, that they're a kind of person who's caring, it's close. Are you from Fremont? And they say, no, I'm from Karachi. You know a little bit about their direction in life. Yeah, and their distance. It tells you a lot about it, so it's radar. So this is what you use as your radar system, and you can ask, find your own niche question that you can ask people, but it's take it as a radar question and look and see what kind of feedback's coming back. I think I used something about, I noticed your blank. You know, there's all kinds of things you can notice about people. And it's like, I noticed your hat. You know, people put on a hat for a reason. Hat's like a flag, you know. Here's my hat. And, you know, I noticed your hat. You noticed my hat? You get a feedback from them, how open they are. We notice that you, and we're using these words you and your and are you from Fremont. It's about them, and you'll get the feedback. Yes.
Roji, I have this difficulty when, this question that many devotees also, while they're doing book distribution, they also ask that, are you from Fremont? Or, but when I ask, and if I get an answer, no, I don't know what to do. And then, I myself in... So I find difficult to ask this question.
Okay. That's really good you brought that up. And it's coming up in the presentation here in a section. I have ready comebacks. There are a select number of responses that you're going to get, you'll find. And the reason is because we live in a world that's controlled by three modes of material nature. And there's different combinations and permutations. And generally by region, people will respond in different ways too. For instance, when you show a Bhagavad Gita to somebody from India, what is the highest percentage response you're going to get? And everybody in the room knows.
I already know everything.
I know everything. I know the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so there's a response to that. You may not know it yet, but there is an actual response to it. And when someone says, I'm in a hurry, or I'm... anything they say, there's a response, and you can calculate it, and you have to collect the responses. They're called comebacks. And when you have your comebacks in your pocket, ready to go, and you know what to say, are you from Fremont? Say no. Then you can ask another question, where are you from? Ask, become a master asker, because he who's asking the question is controlling the conversation. That's how it works. A question mark is a hook. It's also a tennis racket. It's also a looking glass. It does a lot of things, but it's one of the most powerful punctuation points in your arsenal to use the question. Hare Krishna. Okay, so keep your radar tuned to this radio station. WIIFM and Narhari Dev Prabhu, please tell us in the microphone what it means. Hare Krishna.
What is in it for me?
What is in it for me? And that's the radio station that everyone's tuned into according to Shukadeva Goswami and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Everyone cares about themselves. And one thing that people, many things people respond to, we talked about previously, was being personal. Warm greetings, smiles, eye contact, sincere compliments. I heard this one from Praveena the other day when we were going door to door, and somebody opened the door and they had a dog in their hand. It kind of looked like this one that was we had to travel with in Japan for a while. But the person opened the door and she said, "Nice puppy." It's a compliment to the person. Prabhupada said, "Love me, love my dog," and it's the person warmed up because nice puppy. And if you give a warm greeting to people, I've noticed this on the college campus, like at San Francisco State. When I approach people, I just say, hi. You know, just really warm like that. Or when they open the door, too, when you're going door to door and people open the door, and first thing I just say, hi. What are they going to do? Hi. So give warm greetings and smile. I mean, it's a universal thing. It doesn't matter what language or where they're from, and eye contact, and give sincere compliments. Find something to sincerely compliment. Nice puppy. And present. Now, when you present, it means that you've found out a little bit about them by using your radar. And now the presentation means we have a very specific presentation because we have these books and we're presenting them. So here are a couple tips, quick and easy. Trust the hand, because the hand is a very specific kind of instrument. It's controlled by a demigod. It has five fingers. It has a thumb that, what do you call that? Yeah, it's a certain term for that. Monkeys or other kind of living entities don't have it. Opposite thumb thing. Anyway, it can grab. And that's what it does. And you'll find oftentimes when people are, even if they're not interested, they'll still grab the book if you hold it out. Even if they're, and sometimes what I find is at first, if they don't put their hand out, then I go like this. You don't have to do that. I just got in the habit of doing it over the year. But sometimes people are like this because they're going, hand, stay there. Don't open your hand. And I'll just go like this and then like that. And then the hand will go, okay, I'll take it. But I'm dealing with their hand. I'm not talking, I'm not trying to convince them philosophically or psychologically, but I'm looking at their hand and I know I have a relationship with you. You know, you'll open up if I just hold something towards you close enough, because that's what hands want to do. They just like, give me something to grab, you know. And if you hold the book out, a lot of times, just grab it. And that's a big thing in book distribution, because if they don't have the book in the hand, then 90% of the time it doesn't happen, because there's a disconnect, and you can be over here showing them and say, see, this is really good, right? You know, you want to give a donation? And you go, nah, no thanks. But if it's in their hand, they already have it in their hand. It's like they possess it. They're connected to it already. They feel it. Yeah, it's tactile, and it goes right to their heart. And besides that, we were just talking about this. Marj was just giving a talk at Bali Mordaunt's house that if someone touches the book, they get inestimable benefit just from touching it. The Prabhupada said that. He told us just to get them to touch the book. So trust the hand. Learn how to put the book in their hand. And learn a nutshell presentation. This will get you through 90% of the presentation. You can use this line. This Prabhupada gave this line to the devotees in Australia. These books will help you to solve all the problems and miseries of your life and save you from so much suffering. That's all you have to say. If you're presenting a book, you can use a nutshell presentation. And just get practice it, use it, and you can say it over and over again. And then after you get used to using a nutshell presentation, you can innovate and say all kinds of things. But you'll have confidence if you have a nutshell thing that you learn it just like a shloka and you can present it at any time. You got it? Okay. I'm moving really fast, but that's because we're out of time. Learn a few comebacks, Vipul. Comebacks. You got to collect these. Make a little book of comebacks. You can ask the devotees, what do you say when someone says, I don't have time? What do you say when someone says, like this, here's a few comebacks. They say, I already know all about this. What's the comeback? That's great. I could tell by looking at you. I mean, it neutralizes the situation. You look like you know everything. They say, I'm a, let's fill in the blank. What are some of the things? Material world means designations. Everyone's got a designation. Why they can't take the book. I'm a
Christian.
I'm a Christian. Oh, great. Then I'll show you this one. Here's the Christian book. Try another one. I'm an atheist. Oh, great. Then I'll show you this one. Whatever they say, it's great. That's perfect. I'll show you this one. So they think, you know, they're going to present this thing. I'm a this, I'm a that. And he's like, oh, good, perfect. Oh, yeah. Sometimes you even switch books. You're showing them one, you know, like, I'm a such and such. And they go, oh, okay, here. Let me give you this one. You know, I'm a Muslim. Oh, here, give me the Muslim book, you know. We had that happen in Houston. I was just showing a whole group of devotees, their first time on Sankirtan. We had a whole table full of devotees, and we were outside an Indian restaurant. And a Muslim gentleman came out, and I showed him the Bhagavad Gita, and he said, I'm a Muslim. I said, oh, hold on. And I called to the boys over by the table and said, give me the Muslim book. And they were looking at me like I was crazy. It's like, what are you talking, the Muslim book? They're looking at all the books. I said, that one right there. And they grabbed the Krishna book. And I handed it to him, and I said, listen, Allah's in everyone's heart. Our main goal in life is to wake up love for Allah. And this book is all stories about the Lord. And he bought it. And it's not, you know, it's their designation. We have to understand and go beyond the designation by how we present it. They say, are you selling this? Do you ever hear that one? Are you selling it? We refuse to sell it. It's too valuable. We just take a donation. Exact same thing, practically, but you know, you represent it in such a way that they can handle it. So there's a comeback for everything. I'll just tell you that. And you have to learn them. That's the art of doing book distribution. Collect them and trade them with your friends. They say, how much should I donate? We try to keep it under 100. I mean, this is something that's been used successfully by devotees for many years. It's just sort of a cute comeback, but it opens up the whole realm of donation. How much should we give? We try to keep it under 100. You know, it's kind of a cute way of saying it, but there's a lot of different comebacks that you can use in that area. Okay, so engaging. We talked a lot about engaging in people in service, and one of the ways is donations. So for some people, we just say, you can just tell them we're fundraising. It's a popular and well-used word that we're fundraising. It tells people right away that, you know, you would like to have something in return. And another phrase, people are donating. It's an active way of saying, instead of asking them for donation, I'll say that, yeah, people are donating. And we ask for a donation, you just come right in and ask them. We ask for a donation. But just ask. Just get in the habit of asking people for a donation, and people who are willing to will donate. And that engages them in a very unique way, in a powerful way. Teach the Maha Mantra. And we ask this question, do you believe in the power of prayer? Normally after they buy a book, we ask everyone, do you believe in the power of prayer? Most people say yes. If they don't say yes or they hesitate, then we say, well, you've heard of mantra, right? Because that sounds more like spiritual or scientific and not sort of Christian or something. And take the time to teach them the Maha Mantra. Give prasadam. Because as we discussed before, that's our secret weapon. And follow up. Write down their names, address, phone number, email, birthday, family members, pets' names, everything you can possibly get. And don't think I'll remember this later or, you know, I'll make up for it later. But take the time to get as much information as you can for the follow-up. And, of course, those of you who are here for Saturday, and we talked about following up, we're doing this more individually now. So each name that you gather, take personal responsibility, like Sandhya just did with the Brazilian lady, to call her and make sure that she could come to the Harinam. Take a personal responsibility for each person that you meet. And it'll help you, the more information that you write down about them, to jog your memory who they were and how to relate to them the next time. And leave everyone with a kind word. It's one of the best things that you can do after everything's finished, whether they took a book, didn't take a book, whatever the situation was. Leave them with a kind word before they go. It goes a long way. It'll stick in their mind. The personal touch. Send them a letter or a card as soon as possible afterwards. Well, still in your memory, don't let those contacts get old and stale, because then you'll forget who they were and you'll think, oh, it's too long ago. And they might not remember as much either, so as quickly as possible. And stay on the trail, whatever you have to do, of Krishna consciousness. Om Tat Sat. Gop Premanande Haribo. So, this is a quick presentation, but there's a few ideas here. And one of the main ideas here at ISV is that we're encouraging everyone to take an active leadership role in the Sankirtan party, and that's one of the ways that we're organizing to expand. And we have a soft package of information, or how should I say that? We have a soft copy of many documents that you can use that we'll send out to everybody who's interested that have a lot of this information and material and a lot more grids and things that you can use for your Sankirtan party. And being a Sankirtan leader really means taking an initiative to use your spiritual intelligence, how to organize, expand, follow the four laws of book distribution, which are, number one is sadhana. A Sankirtan leader here at ISV means someone who's taking responsibility for their sadhana, to be strict, serious, and sincere. Number two is get books. Part of the role of a Sankirtan leader here is to make sure that you've got books and that the people that are working in your group are also, they have books, that they get out there fully equipped. Number three is? Yeah, so you want to teach people how to do that and encourage them to go out on Sankirtan, and that means that you have to be the leader and help other people go out on Sankirtan and lead them. And number four is? Organize is what we're talking about now. And find out ways that you can organize and increase the Sankirtan party. And we have a lot of different services available in the Sankirtan party. And we're expanding in different ways. There are a lot of different ideas for how to present. Now we're doing book tables at various spots all around the Bay Area. And there are smart boxes. There's the new idea that we have of starting kirtan parties, small ones in different areas of the city. And there are unlimited ways to do this, but get involved in some way and find out from others who have in a leadership position how you can cooperate and help and become a leader in your own area and take responsibility for organizing and bringing more devotees in. And in this way, we'll expand the Sankirtan party. I thank all the devotees for taking your time to come to this presentation. And if you have any questions more after this, then you can ask me or some of the other Sankirtan devotees, and we'll fill you in on any of the other information of how to complete this process of being a Sankirtan leader. Are there any final comments or burning questions? Yes, Vipul.
Prabhuji, when we meet people who are already into some different philosophy, like impersonalism or say something speculative, and then they also start saying their philosophy, then sometimes, you know, we may feel that let's, you know, question, you know, him and about his philosophy and try to explain him our philosophy. So then that sometimes takes a lot of time. So what to do when he starts his philosophy?
One thing is to keep the idea of how to engage them in your mind, because oftentimes when you just go into conversation and there's no resolution to it, then you can feel a little bit drained from the whole thing. So look for openings how to engage the person. And generally, you want to try to balance these things by considering the quality of the person also, and spend quality time with quality people and people that aren't that interested, that you can sort of pick up on that they just like to talk. Then spend a medium amount of time and people that are not that interested, or you could tell they're not that quality, then spend very little time. Yes, Marsh? Okay. Okay, that's a good point. So mantras, how to get away from people who may be time wasters. There's a few ways. Sometimes you have to innovate. I was at a Walmart recently, and well, not so recently, a couple of years ago, Parma Karuna was there and another devotee, and a very friendly man came out. Actually, he bought a book, and then he went to his car, and after about a half hour of shopping or something, he came back just to talk. And that meant there was no end to it, because he had already bought the book, and he just wanted to talk and go on and on. And I wasn't sure exactly how to get out of it, except for then I signaled to Parma, because he saw the situation, to call me on my cell phone. I kind of pointed my cell phone. And he called me, and I said, I'm really sorry, but I have to take this call. And I got away. You can't do that every time, but sometimes when I meet, for instance, somebody like a Christian who may be fanatical, and immediately they'll start expressing themselves as soon as I show them the book, I'll say, I'm so happy to have met you. We need more people like you in the world. It's people of faith like you who are keeping the world afloat. Thank you very much. Usually what they're looking for and expecting is some sort of conflict, and that's what they thrive on. So when you actually give them some encouragement and thank them, then you know you can release and walk away. So that's one way. And sometimes you could just tell people that, you know, if they're sincere but they just want to talk and everything, say, why don't I get your email and we can go through some of these points, you know, and talk about it in more detail later. And just tell them that, you only have a couple more hours, but could we talk about this later on the phone or by email? And just, you know, politely tell them. Most people will understand that. But don't hesitate. If you feel like you're starting to feel anxious that it's going on too long or something like that, don't feel hesitant to cut it off and say, let me move on. Because you can waste a lot of time that way. Anything else? Kishore, anything? Okay. All right, so then we're going to reconfigure the room, and Maharaj is going to give a talk. Right? Yes? Maybe. Okay, Maharaj might give a talk if we set up the room. And then after that, of course, we'll have Artik. Thank you very much, everybody. It's been a real pleasure. Hare Krishna. Jai. Go Primanande Haribo.